Well, we live in a time rife with tensions and hostilities, don't we? Mistrust and divisive tribalism. We've come to such an absurd point as to think that our political views are our identity, that our views about how politics should be and public policy are what define who we are as individuals. Story on the news last night speaks to this. A real estate agent or developer, I don't know, or broker, I don't know what he was doing, but he's put out a call. Did some of you hear this? Yeah, put out a call nationwide encouraging folks with conservative views to move into housing developments where conservative views will be the norm. They don't have to have a neighbor who has a different opinion than they about what? Politics. That's tribalism. That's fodder for range wars. I'm a sheep herder, you're a free range rancher, and we are enemies. Remember American history? It was brutal. It doesn't feel good about this. Most of us think it's just terrible, whatever our political persuasion. And I have to confess, I'm praying for that guy's failure. And this is on top of our own internal trials and tribulations, our own personal ones as well. So we're carrying around those and having all of this other layered on top of us, worries and stresses. It's too much. There's too much to do, too little time in which to do it. No way of saying no, not really, without too much emotional fallout, somebody being offended maybe, or looking like we're failing. So our lives feel like we're living in a shrill, off-key cacophony of noise. We're fatigued most of the time trying to manage ever shorter fuses. And we come to Sunday in Advent, when we're asked to contemplate what? Peace. For many of us, our inclination is to call to mind the absence of war and conflict, that kind of peace. We're not so ready to embrace the idea of inner peace, calming peace, nourishing, renewing peace, space for a huge sigh of relief and rest, that kind of peace. And it's hard to come by in a world like this. But here we are, trying to prepare our hearts for the advent of the Christ. We are enumerating all of the things we have to do, accomplish, do, start, finish, paste together, sort, mail, deliver, attend, buy, for, not to mention take out the garbage and feed the cat so we can close the door. Where are your minds this morning? Where's mine? But we're called to come in and contemplate. And today we have a beautiful passage to contemplate to help us on our way. We have an astonishingly beautiful text. And when we really hear it, it stops us in our tracks, I think. It gives us pause, if even for just a second. Verse 10, Psalm 85. Steadfast love and faithfulness will meet. Righteousness and peace will kiss each other. Such an intimate, wonderful demonstration of concord. We may not believe it, but we surely long for it. It sings to us this truth, and our hearts want it to be true. Do we dare trust that it can be? The answer to this, I think, is introduced in verse 8, where our psalmist has just finished a somewhat a litany of lament But then it quickly switches or dramatically switches, and the psalmist says, I will listen to what God the Lord will speak. I will listen. A woman came into the church this week yelling. And when I found her, she continued to yell. She wasn't just yelling as someone here, she was yelling. She was angry, she was upset. And unfortunately, she didn't pick a time when I was at my best. I didn't yell back, but I know my voice lifted upwards. And I was by no means calming for either her or me. I wanted to reason with her, but she didn't want, nor did she need, reason. She needed a solution, and most of all, she needed me to listen. But she couldn't listen to the solutions I was offering. We can get so wrapped up in what daunts us, and we can get so internally agitated that we can't hear reason. And I think we can probably all identify with this state. Now, there are some of us who are just wired to be really easygoing. I bless you. There are others of us not so much. But this is the state of agitation affects us spiritually. It's not just an emotional interaction thing with other people or our own internal self. It is a spiritual issue. It isn't just a matter of temper and emotion. It's a state enabling deafness. And deafness to God, not just others. The psalmist has just recited a state of distress, as I've mentioned, the need for being renewed and revived, a feeling of having been bereft and without help. But he turns from what's besieging him and says, I will listen. I will quiet myself and open my ears to seek the voice of God. It's a conscious, intentional decision he makes. I will quiet myself and open my ears and let God speak. For God will speak peace, he says. God will speak peace. God will speak peace to God's faithful, he says. And who are the faithful? The New Revised Standard Version we heard today says, those who turn to God in their hearts, and certainly they are the faithful, those who turn their hearts to God. But there's a more complete idea in the original Hebrew here. It's also meaning those who do not turn back to folly. That's kind of a different picture, isn't it? And I think we all struggle. We want to turn our hearts to God, but we also get pulled every now and again, and sometimes for some of us more frequently, to the folly, our old habits, that default, that worry. The beleaguered psalmist expects, hopes, trusts he or she will hear God speak peace. And here the word is shalom. The kind of peace that is all-encompassing, need-satisfying well-being. That kind of peace. That deep, settled peace of well-being. It's more than just the absence of conflict and violence. The psalmist sets out to explain what happens once the faithful listen, and what being faithful in this way activates, what it brings to fruition. God's salvation is at hand for those who revere God, the psalmist says, regard and respect and honor and worship and seeking to please God, that kind of revering, those who hold God as dear and worthy of unreserved devotion, that kind of reverence, wholehearted, undivided attentiveness. God's salvation is at hand for those who revere God. Shalom offers this kind of peace to those kind of people. If one reveres God, one is blessed with shalom. and salvation is at hand. Now, salvation here refers not just to the forgiveness of sins, but to the active presence of God. The active presence of God is at hand, he says. It is in this listening, revering offering to God that we witness steadfast love and faithfulness meeting. Righteousness looking down from heaven and meeting faithfulness springing up from the earth. God's unfailing love towards us meets our faithful, revering listening. Our faithfulness rises up. Righteousness descends. Righteousness as in right relationship with God, with others, and with the natural order. These words, love, faithfulness, peace, and righteousness, speak to God's nature and what it is God seeks to make real in our lives and in our world. Our folly is putting our trust in our own agency or the agency of someone else or money or a claim or power or a job or an affiliation of one sort or another, and for some, their government. It is our folly that leads us to that tight rope, high wire, frenetic racket. It is God who can lead us to peace. And this peace is more than a solitary individual blessing. It is meant to be both communal and corporate. It's a corporate act. It's all of us together with this same posture, listening to God, leading to a communal, ever-widening, healing peace. It's kind of like an invasive species. Really, it only takes one or two, depending on the species, before it takes over. We might think of ourselves that way. A positive, peace-sharing, invasive species. There was a beautiful example of this, I think, this week. It surely struck me. I think it probably did you as well. Pope Francis gave voice to this kind of idea when he said, the presence of God today is called Rohingya. Did you hear that? Pope Francis was invoking the power and reality of steadfast love meeting faithfulness, and righteousness and peace embracing with a kiss. When these beleaguered, sorely treated people were sitting in the presence of a Catholic Pope, telling him their stories and he what, listening to them and asking their forgiveness. His calming, settled peace, witnessing to them and calling out the peace they held in their hearts, the trust they held in Allah, and the two meeting together as a demonstration to the wider world what that kind of reconciliation and oneness can look like. The psalmist concludes with, "The Lord will give what is good, and our land will yield its increase. Righteousness will go before the ones who listen and will make a path for their steps." The Lord gives what is good and makes a path for our steps. As individuals, as a body, as a people. I will listen. I will listen.